Welcome to Scrappy ABM. This is your podcast with practical playbooks that don't break the bank. In this podcast, we dig into the exact playbooks that ABM practitioners are using today to get their first ABM program off the ground. We'll dig into how they're using their current tech stack in order to create scrappy programs that rely more on creativity than new technologies. So if you're looking for how to get ABM off the ground in your organization in the next 90 days, let's dive into this episode. Hello and welcome to Scrappy ABM. This is your podcast with practical playbooks that don't break the bank. This is your host, Mason Cosby. And today I am joined by Jessica Fulis, who is the Senior Director of Partnerships and Demand Gen at Inverta. Jessica, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me, Mason.
Okay, I'm super excited to walk through this playbook with you because you kind of outlined, I think we're actually largely on the same wavelength as we think through how to like build the first iteration and then like iterate on it and inevitably scale it. So I'm excited to kind of dig into it. For all intents and purposes, for legal reasons, we will not use specific client names, but you may actually already know this client and they're really cool. And anyway, Jessica, can you just start us by thinking through, okay, we are trying to figure out who to even go after. So like, how did you guys determine even the right place to start from a targeting perspective?
Yeah. So this is always the fun as an agency, right? Like you have a client that comes to you and says, we know where to start, right? And then you're like, when you get in there, you're like, maybe not, right? And so this client hired us to do one to few ABM for them. Now, I don't know about you, but I typically would never start anybody at one to few, right? Like, you know, either they've got a super strategic initiative and they want to go one to one, or they want to just get better at their demand gen, so they want to go one to many, right? One to few was a very odd place to start, but that's what they thought they wanted to do. And so literally that's where we started with them, you know, but as we started to dig in, it became very clear very quickly that one to few was not the place to start because first of all, their sales team wasn't on board. So in order to do, you know, one to one and one to few, you have to have sales rep alignment, you know, and, you know, they didn't have resources to build personalized content and they didn't. So very quickly, it kind of came to, we all came to the realization together that one to few was not the place to start. So we kind of took a step back and I went back to the person who paid the bill in the first place and said, hey, I think a better use of your money is going to be on one to many because you just told me that you guys are falling behind on your pipeline for the year. This can help. That's kind of where we got to. And then kind of the story goes from there, but you know.
Yeah, I'm instantly curious, selfishly, because we have these same conversations with clients and sometimes they're like, no, we're going to stick with it. And then yeah. I know a lot of listeners are trying to figure out how to get this buy-in internally. It's like, how did you even approach that conversation to say objectively, this is what is best for you? And I please, please, please listen.
Yeah. Yeah. So, well, like I said, so one to few is kind of this gray area in between one to one and one to many, but regardless, you need to have rep alignment because it needs to be a very rep intensive approach to account based marketing, right? They're going to do a lot of the outreach. They're going to do a lot of the outbound marketing, provides some air cover, but really for it to work, the sales reps really need to be hands on and driving it. And in this instance, the sales team didn't want to give the marketer, the ABM marketer, the time of day, you know, to get that intelligence to help figure out what those clusters were going to be, what's the right messaging, all of that type of stuff needed to be defined. And there was not a partner on the sales side to do it, right? Mm-hmm. So very quickly, you know, like I said, I had kind of my touch bases with, you know, the VP of demand gen who was paying the bill. And I was like, look, you know, and they did push back. Well, keep trying, keep, you know, see what you can do, blah, blah, blah. And after about the third time I came back, I said, look, you just shared with me that your pipeline is flagging. This one to few is not going to get you pipeline and get you back on track to the degree that you need to be. And that was really kind of, and I said, but a one to many approach, given, you know, the segmentation that you have in the industry that you're in, a one to many approach is going to help you turn that pipeline around. And I, you know, here's how is kind of, I laid it out and you know, that's where they were like, okay, let's dive in.
So I want to dig into that just a little bit more of how are you then determining the right audience for one to few? Cause we've talked to some clients and we're saying, you know, depends on exactly that. Hey, your pipeline is low. Sure. We could go pull a list from a data enrichment source, but the challenge with that is like, they don't know who you are. And if you want faster results, which mm-hmm. everyone wants faster results, we found it's just easier to go to the existing database and segment the existing database and say, these are good accounts that already know about you. So like, how do you guys approach specifically finding that initial target account list?
Yep. So there's a bit of an art and a science to it. So with this particular account, they had nine different segments, right? They had three different types of customers that they sold to, and then they had large enterprise, strategic, mid-market, and then SMB, right? So nine discrete segments. So that was great. They already had segments. Then it was like, okay, so where do you need the most help? So we looked at kind of where their pipeline was falling behind, those sorts of things. We also looked at where was the strongest message. We looked at the competitive landscape, you know, where do you have tight competition? And then last but not least, we looked at, okay, where is there already a good relationship with sales, right? So we kind of looked at those four different dimensions, kind of pick where we were going to start. The goal was once the VP of demand gen was in, the goal was to do this across the board, but we needed to pick a pilot, right? As you obviously know. So that's what helped us to discover that pilot. We didn't go with the one that was like the weakest because there was a reason that segment was the weakest, right? They didn't have content specific for that segment. So we picked one that was kind of middle of the road that we felt we could get quick wins with, but they were also a little bit more enabled to actually be successful with. We started there and then we went up and down from there. You know, then we tackled the weaker ones, right? Once we had a model in place, because, you know, as you know, with every account that you work with, ABM looks slightly different, right? Because of their corporate culture, because of the industry that they sell into, the personas, right? It's always going to be different. So we used that pilot to develop what ABM looked like for them. And then it was a repeatable process across the other segments.
I love the first thing you called out is culture. So often we've worked with some clients and they're like, yeah, we don't want to really talk with our sales team. Like, they're too busy. And I was like, it's probably not going to work then. I just love the culture piece that I think we talk about the alignment to marketing sales often. I think it never is heard in the sense of like culture. It's more like, how do we align our goals? And it's like, well, do you actually just have a collaborative team? Like, do they actually enjoy working together?
Right. Right. And I mean, and this is a soft skill that I feel like a lot of marketers lack is being able to work with sales. I mean, I hate to say it, but I feel like it's a skill set that every marketer needs to develop. And, you know, the ones that get into marketing or into ABM typically have that skill set, those genes. I typically found it from field marketing. I felt was always a great place because, you know, they were kind of always doing hand-to-hand combat with sales anyways. I felt that they made really good ABM marketers, but there's some that are like, oh, God, I've got to go present to sales and I know they're going to push back. And those ones, maybe you leave them in your traditional like inbound team. Yeah. Yeah. Right.
So now we've worked through a lot on specifically how to even find the right targets. I'm curious because I've seen a lot of people that just start an ABM program and they're like, we're going to pull a vertical list and say, this is our program. And then they just kind of message all those people the same. So I'm curious, like, as you were then segmenting even further, like, how did you then segment this audience to give clear reasons to reach out?
Yep. So that honestly is the most important part of all of this, right? You know, we were fortunate this company had an ABM platform. I will not name which one. There's two. You got a 50-50 shot of getting it right. But they happened to have an ABM platform. They also had additional intent data sources. They also had some pretty brilliant RevOps folks that did wonderful things with data that really helped them inform, you know, kind of, well, I'm going to take a step back. The first thing we did was really walk them through defining their buyer's journey. They did not really have a defined buyer's journey. They're like, yeah, top, middle, bottom of funnel. I'm like, yeah, okay. And they were like, you know, when I, you know, we were doing an audit of their content, they're like, we've got these great case studies. We need to get them in front of everyone. I'm like, okay. Right. So we had to kind of start there and really define what was their buyer's journey. What was the goal in each stage of the buyer's journey? Because unlike as popular, you know, popular now out in the marketing ether is it's all about pipeline. But guess what? Somebody who is super top of the funnel, pre-awareness, awareness, whatever you call it, right? Pipeline is not your goal at that stage. Your goal at that stage is to engage them and move them to the next stage, right? And so that's where you have to come up with different metrics at each stage of the buyer's journey. You also have to understand what it is you need to inform them about at each stage of the buyer's journey. Top of the funnel, some of them don't even realize they have a problem that they need to solve for. So you need to help them recognize there's a better way of doing things than how they're doing it today, right? Not mentioning your company's name. And then, you know, you go from there and then you're like, okay, there's a category of solutions that can help you, still keeping your company's name in the background. As they move to the third stage, now it's like, and we're the ones that are the best suited to help. Now you hit them with your case study and now you hit, right? But top of the funnel, it should be thought leadership content, industry reports, those kinds of things. And so really mapping all that out became really important for these guys because they had so much content that they didn't know what to do with. And then getting back to that RevOps team who was really good with the data, that really helped them then, you know, in their ABM platform, then sort where all the accounts in that segment sat. So they knew which ABM messaging flow to put them into, to move them through the funnel.
I love that. We've had quite a few past podcast episodes that are specific to like that same structure on how do you progress accounts? How do you actually then outline what they actually need at that stage? So yeah, if you've listened to the show, there's a lot of content on that front. I'm curious, as you then think through specifically the nuances of audiences and like, how do you actually determine the best distribution channels to actually get that content in front of them? So how did you start to think through the channel mix for the program?
Yeah, that's where I feel like the art of this comes in. And that's where we honestly, we really dive deep in doing a deep questioning of the client, right? Because they're going to know way better than we do, right? We're like, here's our standard set of channels. And they're like, yeah, but, and in this instance, they sold to, you know, general contractors and subcontractors. Those guys aren't on LinkedIn every day. You know, they're probably not even going to be online all that much, right? So what does that channel mix look like? That's where we rely, or we'll do it for them, on research. We'll call their customers, right? And do some real customer research to understand where those channels are, because it's not going to be the same for every industry and for every buyer that you're trying to get to. You know, and also then add on the complexity of different personas, right? And different personas are going to be looking different places for different information and stuff. And, you know, you add in then the product mix. And I mean, it can get really complicated really fast. So I feel like start with the buyer's journey and work at the account level. Then you can layer on things like personas and stuff after that. If you try and do it all out of the gates, you're never going to launch a campaign, as I'm guessing you would agree, Mason.
Yeah. I always just tell people get a minimum viable program out, because you then transition from the problem being, because we actually have people come in about it and they're like, our problem is we don't have an ABM program. I'm like, that's not a problem. Like, that's a potential solution, but that's not the problem. Okay. So if you get a program launched, you then identify, here are all the individual problems that we have in the context of our program. You can go solve like, oh, we suck at tracking at the awareness stage. We should probably fix that. Or like, oh, we don't have content here that progresses into the next stage. Or, oh, mm-hmm. we're missing this person in the buying committee. We can go solve for that. So yeah, couldn't agree more.
Well, and I always say, like, the first program we put in market is not going to be perfect. It is not. Right? Like, we're going to learn things, right? That's why you have to pilot it, because you're going to learn. Once again, this goes back to no two ABM campaigns or programs or strategies are ever the same, right? So you got to put it out there. And, you know, we might think, hey, these, you know, magazines are where, you know, or online magazines are where people are consuming content, and you launch it and in 3 months in, like the engagement has been very low there, right? So then you shift budget, you shift strategy to different tactics, which ones are performing, right? And so, you know, piloting anything, I mean, an ABM in particular, is just so important to learn, adapt, and optimize.
Yeah. I am curious from your perspective of the level of sales involvement in those earlier stages as a viable component to distribution. Like, are you guys typically seeing sales as involved at awareness or in initial stages, or is that much later down the account progression model?
So this was a fun experiment with this client, because their sales team was skeptical. They were ABM skeptical. They were like, people have tried ABM before here and it's never worked. Well, they really didn't try ABM. They had a target account list and they marketed to it. So the team was a little skeptical of it. So really what we did is we actually had the sales team keep doing what they were doing for the first 3 months. And then what we said was, okay, now we're bringing you data. And what we saw was, you know, because they had a huge SDR team who would just dial for dollars on every account that they could that fit within the segment that they were assigned to. And what we were able to show was, hey, when you call on people at the awareness or pre-awareness stage, I can't remember what the percentages were, you know, of conversion to actual meetings, but as they got to like that marketing qualified account level, their ratio of getting meetings was 7x. What it was at any stage prior in their buyer's journey. And when the SDR leadership saw that, they went, oh. And then they were like, game on. Then it became, and once again, you know, we didn't try and boil the ocean with the first pilot. Now we added on the sales enablement that mirrored and mimicked and went along with that campaign, right? To make sure that, you know, when somebody was in an MQA across all their channels, they were seeing the same message, as well as when that SDR reached out, they reached out with the same message as well.
I love that specific framing of just start ABM primarily with marketing and like start to actually capture data, because then instead of it being a theory or a hypothesis, it's, hey, these accounts that you said you really wanted, they're actively on our site right now. You should probably go reach out. It's a way different conversation. So I'm curious, to actually drive that engagement, you've got to have great content. And yes. One of the things you outlined is that this client had way more content than they ever knew what to do with. So I'm curious for you, like, how do you guys actually determine the content that should be used in the ABM program based on the existing content inventory?
Yeah. So we base that based on, you know, obviously those buying journey stages, right? We classify or categorize every piece of content they have based on buyer's journey stage. And then we also typically go through a messaging framework exercise with them, right? So then you start to map up, you know, based on the messaging at each stage. Okay. Do these pieces of content map to any of those? Yes or no. Right. And then you've got a matrix that you can say, oh, okay, well, we've got enough content here, but we're light here. Right. Or we've got content here that's so-so that'll work out of the gates. Once again, get the pilot in market. And that's the first piece of content that we rev. Right. And so that's kind of the way we help people think through it, because we want to get them up and running, learning those are the things as quickly as possible. So we try and work with what we have out of the gates. But then once again, before we hit go on the campaign, we've got the roadmap built of, okay, where do we need to strengthen our content to make this program even more successful? And then that's what the team puts in their roadmap with their content team and those sorts of things to get working on kind of, you know, once the campaign's in market.
And I'm curious for you, as you think through identifying specific content gaps, like, yes, I'm sure that there are specific gaps that are pretty apparent, but how are you guys specifically identifying and doing further research, even figure out what should we fill this gap with? Like, for example, I'm sure you could easily segment by content types, like, oh, you have no case studies for this industry. So it's like, it may be really hard, but less that and more like specific topics that, you know, people should be researching.
Right, right. And that, you know, when we're doing the messaging workshop, that's where we come up with what are those key themes and key topics, right, that need to come out in that section, right? And so that's where we also do that cross-referencing of, oh, we've got a real big hole here, right? What do we do? Is there, you know, and that's where we scramble and we're like, okay, do you have a bunch of blogs that, you know, and once again, like, this is where AI can be really helpful, right? I'm not going to mention AI too many times because it's oversaturated at this point, but that's where AI can be really helpful is, you know, you throw it into a tool like Embrace or Claude and you can say, okay, make these four blog posts into an ebook, right? And it can actually do a pretty good job with something like that, right? And then you throw it off to your creative team and you can have a new, quote unquote, new piece of content that's not new at all in kind of no time flat. And so, you know, if there's just an apparent gap that there's no quick fix for, then, you know, then we have to talk about, like, do we delay launching this or do we, you know, just stick something in there that's not quite the right fit? But once again, mark that as the first area we need to focus on once this is in market.
Yeah, I think that's a very, very helpful breakdown. Last couple of questions would just be specifically tracking. Like, how do you actually aim to measure the success at the various stages of different programs?
Yep. So, you know, we're really big on helping our clients convert to focusing on MQAs versus MQLs. You know, the MQL is not going to go away. It's built into all of our systems, into our MarTech. You know, sales is like, we've trained them to want the MQL, right? Especially those SDR teams. So, but, you know, having them run parallel with MQAs is a nice way to start to make that transition. The fact of the matter is the smart sales reps will start to get it. They'll be like, okay, chasing MQLs, but when an MQA comes to me, oh yeah, no, that's an account that's ready to talk, right? They'll start to see it and that behavior will start to shift. But it's going to take a while. So, you know, everybody's like, death to the MQL. No, unfortunately not. Some other things that we like to help, you know, marketing teams, you know, understand as well as demonstrate within the organization is, hey, how are accounts moving through that buyer's journey? If you started off with 1,500 accounts on your target account list, where were they all at the start of the program? That's your baseline. And then 3 months in, what does that distribution now look like? Right? That's going to show people, oh, there's movement. Okay, maybe, because 3 months is, depending on your sales cycle, a really short runway to show a ton of pipeline. But if you can start to show that movement, start to show, you know, the things that lay behind that, like our engagement on your website, engagement with your campaigns, those sorts of things, that shows that there's momentum. Obviously, pipeline and revenue are going to be, you know, those ones. ACV are those standard ones. But you know, showing that progress, I think, is really important because ABM is a different animal. And, you know, the MQLs aren't really the way to measure the success of an ABM program.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. Last, just two basic questions would just be, as you've helped implement ABM programs and specifically with this client that we're talking through, I mean, obviously the sales team involvement is a roadblock to implementation, but what are some other common roadblocks that you have seen or experienced with this client example?
Time, you know, once again, the change doesn't happen overnight. And so, you know, a lot of, you know, teams will be like, cool, well, show me the results in a month. Okay. Right. That's just unrealistic. And if that's the standard you're being held to, I don't know if ABM is going to be right for you at this stage of the game. You know, I mean, you can't swim upstream, you know, always on that one. So the time, you know, I think there's also a perception issue that, and, you know, I think from the Scrappy perspective, you guys would agree, you know, that, oh my God, you got to create all this new content, right? We just talked about like working with what you got, right? But people are like, no, we're going to have to create all this new content. And it's like, okay, guys, this is just good campaign development. Whether you're doing it for ABM or not, right? This should be the kind of process you go through for good campaign development. So if you don't have these processes in place now, cool. And maybe like, let's get that process in place and then let's hit the ground running with ABM. I think that's another, you know, that we've run into with people. They just don't have the bandwidth. They also don't have the tech stack enabled for ABM. So I'm not saying that you have to have an ABM platform. I'm not saying you have to have all these bells and whistles, but you've got to have your Salesforce and your, you know, Marketo or HubSpot or Pardot set up to run on accounts, not just on individuals, right? And that's definitely a shift for people. And then I think last but not least, it's really the executive leadership, getting them on board with it. And, you know, once again, getting the budget, getting the time allowance, and, you know, getting them to align on what those new metrics are going to be. You know, at this company, you know, at the end of 18 months, they had 75% of their pipeline coming from their target account list, from a dead stop zero, right? But it took 18 months to get there, yeah. Right? But, you know, they had wins along the way, which I think is what kept everybody on board.
And I think it's such a realistic look at like, this is not a 3 month flip a switch. This is it's a longer term program. But again, when we're looking at the success of ABM for those that invest the longer term, you're seeing like 70% increases in pipeline growth or ACV mm-hmm. growth or accelerated deals and sales team satisfaction. And like, I don't know what else you could ask for. So last question would just be, any other parting wisdom for someone that's trying to build their first ABM program?
Oh, that catch-all question. Well, I think, you know, I think when, you know, now I've been talking about ABM for a decade, really hard to believe that that has been true. But, you know, when we first started talking about ABM, it was this standalone thing. It was seen as a standalone discipline. You had your demand and then you had ABM. I think, you know, for teams out there, it should be seen as a core component of your overall, we call it the demand continuum, right? So you've got your inbound, you've got your outbound, you've got your ABM, you've got your partner and ecosystem, right? It should be a component of that whole demand continuum. It shouldn't be this, you know, the death to the pyramid, right? That pyramid that sits off to the side all by itself, right? It should be, you know, and it should have its own specific pipeline goals, right? Within, but once again, if you've got, you know, you need to drive 100 pipeline, nobody has that low of a pipeline goal, but you need to drive 100 pipeline and you expect 30% of it to come from ABM. Great. What is that going to look like? Is it one-to-one, one-to-few, one-to-many? Who goes into that bucket versus your traditional outbound or inbound, right? And those conversations should be happening right now. This is now December. I'm not sure when this is going to publish, but, you know, that should be part of the conversation right now. But how does it really fit into the broader demand strategy, not a standalone initiative?
Yeah, couldn't agree more. Well, Jessica, thank you so much for joining me today. If people want to find out more about you, where can they find you?
I am the only Jessica Fulis on LinkedIn, shockingly, or on our teams page at Inverta.com.
Well, again, thank you so much for joining me today. This has been Scrappy ABM, and we'll see you in the next one. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Scrappy ABM. If you're looking for more content just like this, I highly recommend you go subscribe to our newsletter. We release weekly playbooks so that you have the actionable ways in which you can start to build an ABM program today. Just go to scrappyabm.com/newsletter to subscribe. And if you enjoyed this episode, we'd really appreciate if you'd leave a 5-star review and hit the notification bell so you never miss an episode. I look forward to seeing you in the next one.